Freddie Silva first began researching crop circles in 1990. Freddie is one of the world's foremost experts on crop circles, sacred space, and consciousness, and he is the best-selling author of Secrets in the Fields, The Science and the Mysticism of Crop Circles. He has also just released the DVD documentary Stairway to Heaven, The Practical Magic of Sacred Space, written and produced by him. Freddie is also a lifelong student of earth mystery, sacred space, and ancient systems of knowledge. He is an internationally known lecturer and has appeared on the History Channel and Discovery Channel, as well as numerous video documentaries, and now our guest on Coast to Coast AM. Freddie, welcome to the program. How are you?
Good morning, George. Not too bad, considering we're having a nor'easter up in New England.
Oh, are they really already, huh? Hey, how did you get interested in investigating crop circles? Because you've always been interested in earth mysteries. Did you just tie that in with that?
Would you believe that I sort of got interested while I was actually ironing a shirt and minding my own business when I was living in Chicago. I was watching television one day and, like I said, just doing my manly chores of ironing a shirt. And I saw this thing on television. It was this this image. And it just seemed to mesmerize me. It seemed to just unlock this subconscious memory. That's the best way I can describe it. And I remember my then wife sitting there and saying to me, well, what do you think it is? And I said, I don't know. And she says to me, well, you just said you knew it. No, I did, but I don't know how to explain it. I remember this symbol and it seems so familiar. And the sound was turned off. It must have been some kind of a news program or something. And this is one of the first major pictograms at the time, the huge 600-foot pictogram in Alton Barnes.
Yes.
And it just seemed to awaken something inside, and it just led to this incredible journey of rediscovery, of reconnecting dots which I'd sort of known about all my life, but I'd never really sort of paid much attention to. I mean, when I was a young child of about 3, I was drawing pyramids all over books and things, and I never even knew how to spell the word pyramid, lest know what it was for. So I guess it's been a sort of a genetic thing. I've known about these things for a long, long time, and the more people that I've come into contact with over the years who've studied this phenomenon, they too have come up with the same story, that it seems to be part of their genetic memory. These things are waking up something in them that they seem to have come here to try and work out.
And you know, Freddie, even if 99 out of 100 of them were made by man, there's that one that's unexplainable, and that's all you really need in this kind of investigation, isn't it?
Absolutely, because once you have something that you cannot rationally explain, or indeed cannot be totally explained by current scientific thought, then you have the basis of a phenomenon.
Is it correct to say that the crop formation phenomenon is a relatively new situation, or has this been going on since the beginning of time here?
It actually appears to have been going on far longer than we've been aware of, because as we know, the crop circles really came to the fore in the early 1980s through the media in England. But the more we talk to people, the more researchers ask around, talk to farmers, talk to their predecessors, and even go back through family history, the more it's becoming obvious that the phenomenon has been going on for far longer than we've been aware. And to date, I think over 200 cases have been catalogued, all the way into 1615. So it does go back quite a bit. I mean, for example, I was aware of several cases back in the 1930s when the farmers used to be out mowing the fields, harvesting the fields. And they talk about witnessing what they called the devil's twists, as they called them in those days, tiny little vortices of wind that suddenly propelled huge parts of the field to just flatten themselves in these circular shapes. And in a very mysterious way, too, because when they tried to spring the plants back up again, they just snapped back down as if they'd sort of been made molten at the base and re-hardened in a new horizontal position. Some of these reports were actually filed with the police, and there are mentionings of balls of light, tubes of light, all kinds of bizarre incidences. And even in 1678, we have a mention in England, but by no less than the director of the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford, who wrote in the History of Staffordshire, which is a county in England, who wrote about these circular impressions in tall grass and in pasture, some of which were shapes which are hexagons within circles, squares within circles, and it doesn't sound like it's your typical sort of fungus that's sort of affecting the crops. I mean, these things had geometric shapes. And even in the 16th century, there's a chronicler who worked for Henry VIII, who went around England noticing things about local folklore which ought to be written down for posterity. And one of the peculiar things that he wrote about was the origin of maypole dancing. And he asked the maypole dancers in England where they got the idea for the geometric shapes that that they took into the dances around these central poles. And what he discovered was that these people said that they would go out in the early morning and copy the geometric shapes that they discovered lying in the tall grasses. Quite amazing. I mean, I don't know if that's a crop circle, but certainly it does sound quite interesting that they go out first thing in the morning, find these geometric shapes in tall grasses. It does make you wonder. So it certainly is a very old phenomenon. It keeps coming up sporadically in history. But it's only in the modern era that when people really started taking attention to it, in other words, that the devil was stopped being blamed, that suddenly it seemed to react, and it suddenly sprung to life and quadrupled and multiplied in great, great shapes as into the phenomenon that we know today.
And they seem to be getting more sophisticated. The geometric patterns seem to be very, very elaborate than they were just a few years ago. Is that the case?
It certainly is. I mean, there are still simple circles going around the world, in fact, in 29 countries so far, that have actually reported 29. These happenings. They seem to be, it's almost as if from the mid-80s, the more attention they received, the more they began to multiply in their complexity. And by the time you get to 1990, they took a quantum leap when they suddenly developed into pictograms. In other words, circles with straight avenues connecting other circles. And by the time you get to 1991, of course, we start getting into the famous Barbary Castle tetrahedron shape, and the Mandelbrot set even popped up as a crop circle. And then they seem to have had a little lapse for a couple of years. In the mid-1990s, they again developed into another quantum leap, and today we're getting fractals of all bizarre shapes and sizes. And they seem to be getting bigger as well. And in the last few years, they're getting fewer and fewer, the genuine ones, in the last few years. But the what they sort of lack in number, they are certainly making up for complexity.
The pictures that you supplied us of the crop formations, Freddie, assuming, let's for one moment, mankind made them, and that may not be the case, and it most likely isn't, but assuming that they did, how long would it take, for example, the crop formation with the circle that's on the coasttocoastam.com website, how long would it take two people to make that sophisticated design? And first of all, we have to assume that they're not seen, that there are no footprints getting into the field, that they have that somehow all covered and taken care of. But if just two people were out there in the field doing that, and that's an immense circle, and the pattern is pretty elaborate, how long would it take them, do you think?
Oh, in complete darkness, hiding from the farmer.
if they have to get caught,
they're going to be in serious trouble. I mean, there are serious laws of prosecution in England for this kind of thing. You have about 4 hours maximum in which to sort of lie low and exploit the natural darkness of the land at that time of the year in England. There was one firm that was actually contracted to hypothetically map out that kind of design in a field using 2 to 3 people, and I think they came up with something like 5 to 6 hours just to sort of map it out properly, put stakes in the ground, align certain things, and you know, another couple of hours on top of that just to actually physically flatten properly. And I think but once they were told that the parameter included doing this in the middle of the night without any kind of visible equipment, then I think the actual parameter went over to something like 12 hours.
Oh, my gosh. Even with night vision goggles, I think they'd have trouble, don't you?
Yes, which they actually employ, some of these people, so I've heard, and even little laser lights and things. I mean, the story gets more complex now, George, because what we're seeing today in England is that groups of people, up to 12 people, are actually going out, getting permission from the farmer, paying them a little bit of money, because some of these people are not making much money off the land in England. It's a very, very difficult job, farming. And so I don't blame them for taking a little cash in hand, because they get much more than the actual crop is worth. So you're seeing groups of about 12 highly trained people with permission from the farmer, which immediately gives them immunity from prosecution, going out in the middle of the night and executing some rather complex patterns of late. But at the same time, we have to remember and be very aware that what they're making is basically land art, and that's the big difference, because the difference between a man-made design and the genuine crop circle is the fact that in the genuine article, the plants haven't been damaged at all. And if you look at some of the photographs, especially from the early era when few people really took an interest in this, you'd find that in the genuine designs, if the plants are left alone, in a couple of days, they start springing back up towards the sun, which is what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And when you have incapable of achieving that kind of effect in a material which is very, very supple, then obviously the parameter becomes very impossible to achieve. I don't think I've ever seen, even with all my years in England, any man-made crop circle that even comes close to the genuine article in terms of reproducing the features that we find in the genuine crop circles.
These people who pay farmers so they can go out and do this land art, are they pawning this off as a crop formation, or do they admit to everyone, hey, we made this?
It's almost a bit of a joke, actually, and you have to understand the English mentality to that extent. It's a bit of a game for them. Some of them admit to it. Most of them don't admit to it, because obviously, once they do, they're up for prosecution. Not that the police are really interested over there, because they've got much more important things to do, like catch other criminals. And there's the rub. They do have that sort of edge. But I mean, they don't really own up to it. They kind of hint about it. They make certain subtle claims. And then when they're challenged about it, they kind of retract them. It's a bit of a game. And I think that they like to sort of maintain the innuendo, if you like, because once you put a suggestion in there, the seduction becomes that much more alluring for people. And also, when you put the suggestion that there might be something not quite genuine about what you're seeing on the internet or on television, then you have that doubt that creeps in, and your ability to believe what you're seeing is somehow lessened. And I think that's a big thing that I find difficult, and I support the public in this, that once they have reason to believe, to doubt what they're seeing, then obviously the authenticity and the believability of the phenomenon comes into question. And I think that's what the hoaxers are trying to do. They're trying to stop you from believing just by putting the doubt in there.
29 countries are reporting crop formations. Of those 29, what countries are getting some of the most reports? I would assume England being one of them, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think about 80% of all known crop circles, and we're talking about over 10,000 reports now historically. I'd say confidently, looking at all the databases available, 80% in the south of England.
80% of all of them, 80% in England.
Absolutely.
It's huge.
Yeah, it's quite a large number. But the more you go back in time, the more we start looking at archive material, at local reports, the more we start getting a sense that there's been also a large cluster in the Canadian and American prairie, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Montana, that particular area up there as well. There are certain reasons for that, geological reasons for that. And then they're interspersed in little bits and pieces all around the world. I mean, even South Africa has reported crop circles going back into myth as well. In fact, it's written in local folklore that these circles of the gods have been appearing for many hundreds of years. And whenever they appeared, there were times of great celebration. Tribes used to come out and put flowers all the way around these circular depressions. And people would take 3 days out to do feasting and honor what they called the gods. So it certainly does live in the folklore of certain countries around the world, for sure, yes.
80% in England. Why England? Why that country?
I'd like to say it's something to do with the beer.
but I don't think it is.
Or the weather.
yeah.
There's something about the. There's two connections that seem to have come up predominantly in the research. One is the association, the historical association with the sacred spaces that still dot that part of the world. We have one of the largest concentrations of Neolithic sites anywhere in the world. Northern Europe, northern France, southern England, Wales, that whole area is very, very rich in ancient history. And what some of the early researchers like Delgado and Andrews found out was that the circles seem to be appearing beside, near to, in alignment with sacred spaces. These are places like Stonehenge, Standing Stones, the earthen mounds that we call the tumuli. There was a certain association with that, as if they were trying to remind us of an old ancient spiritual technology that was still in the landscape and was now being utilized by the what I call the circle makers. There's also the idea that there was something about the geology of the land that was very much important to the way that the crop circles appeared, because southern England is very, very unusual in that it lies on top of a great big piece of chalk. It's the world's deepest chalk aquifer. Hmm. And when you start plotting all the known crop circles on a map, it begins to take obvious note that they seem to favor this incredible large piece of chalk. Now, the same can be said of the Canadian prairie, except in the Canadian prairie, we have limestone. And limestone is the chemical twin of chalk. So there seems to be a favoring of this particular aquiferous ground.
Why would that be, Fernie?
It seems that, and I'm not the first person to say this by any means, a number of people have looked at the aquifer connection with the crop circles, and it seems to me that the water is part of the actual manifestation process, because chalk and limestone both are very porous rocks, limestone being the chemical twin of chalk.
Right.
And when you have water, and especially a place where it rains a lot, and underground aquifers, where you have water that comes pouring through a chalk and limestone, you get an effect called absorption. And it means that when the water passes through this alkaline rock, it creates an electrostatic charge, which means that the whole area of southern England, for example, becomes very highly charged in terms of electromagnetic static energy. And I think that is part of the actual formation process, because when farmers have gone into the crop circles, first thing in the morning, one of the first things that they report is that the ground is absolutely bone dry inside the circle and very wet outside. It seems to be part of the process that the energy involved in making the crop circles is favoring the water, because it certainly is drying it for sure.
Well, that's a good point. With the interaction of people and crop circles, when they go to investigate, do they come up with similarities of all these hundreds? Think about that. We'll be back with you in a moment, Freddie. I want to find out about similarities that are out there. And there's lots more to talk about. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment at Coast to Coast. Freddie, similarities of these crop formations all around the planet. Are people reporting similar things when they go in there and check them out?
By and large, yes. The things that keep popping up here and there, I'm talking in very general terms now. Eyewitnesses, for example, they talk about seeing balls of light, balls which are basically translucent yet very vibrant in color, the size of a beach ball, just flying around the area either before or after a crop circle manifests. They talk about beams of light coming out of the sky and hitting the ground, swirling the crop in front of them, retracting back into the clouds, and either a crop circle manifests in front of them, or if one pops up about 24 hours later in that same location. They talk about the a trilling sound that they hear, almost like a cicada, and this seems to precede any kind of sighting in terms of eyewitness reports. They also talk about the way in which the plants appear to have been just made molten at the base and sort of flattened in a new horizontal position, but yet with this wonderful springiness to it, as if they're still almost hovering just above the soil, about an inch above the soil. They talk about the dryness of the soil inside the crop circle, and specifically in the Canadian prairie, where a lot of the farmers pay a lot of attention to this phenomenon. And in fact, to this day, they've actually assisted the researchers to an incredible degree of cooperation. These are some of the things that the general observations that people talk about. The spiraling of the crops as well is very important. Even when you have things like straight lines, what amazes me is the little detail to some of these designs, where even straight lines, their origin on the ground appears to be based on a spiral motion of energy, which eventually branches itself out into this snaking pattern, this waveform, almost resembling a sine wave on an oscilloscope, which eventually gives the impression of looking like a straight line from the air. These are some of the common features that we keep finding across the world. So it seems to be the same sort of technology, if you like, in the greatest sense of the word, that seems to be adopted no matter where you go.
Freddie, I had heard that when people go into these crop circles to investigate them, and some of them bring electronic equipment, that in some cases the equipment goes haywire. Is that true?
Oh yes, it's if you enjoy your electric equipment, please leave it at home. It's a very expensive phenomenon. I've seen people take. Let's say, I think one of the most famous cases, which actually I wasn't present, but the person who was there was very trustworthy. There was a busload of about 12 or 13 Japanese tourists, all of whom simultaneously went into the same crop circle, and every one of their equipment, I'm talking about cameras, video equipment, every piece of that equipment failed simultaneously. Whole packs of batteries that should have lasted for 14 hours were drained in a matter of minutes. That is quite an astonishing feat. I've heard that the BBC on several occasions now have taken to interviewing people inside crop circles, and in hindsight they wish they didn't, because as soon as the camera crosses the very perimeter or the edge of the crop circle, a very agonizing array of red warning lights starts appearing on their equipment, and to this day I think they've lost about two or three very, very expensive video cameras, and I'm talking about equipment going into the $20,000-$30,000 bracket. I've been in airplanes in microlights, for example, these incredibly large wings with a little engine strapped to them. Whenever we cross the airspace of the crop circle, funny things start happening to the electrical equipment, and even anybody with cameras flying over the airspace of the crop circles will also find that their equipment will sometimes not work whenever you happen to be in the airspace. I have one very famous case where I was flying into a crop circle from about 500 feet in the air, and I can show you on my negatives exactly every shot on the approach, all the way around, always going around the crop circle, and the nine frames that were shot over the actual airspace are completely dead. There's nothing there. And yet, when the film continues and we're flying out of the airspace, there's a perfectly exposed picture every frame after that. It's as if you're entering a sort of a shielding effect. And I mean, it has a temporary debilitative effect on aircraft equipment, just in case anybody's concerned about this, because there have not been any fatalities involved, luckily. But I do know helicopter pilots in Wiltshire in England who, to this day, refuse to fly over the airspace of a crop circle because they, of all their equipment start going awry. All their compasses don't start pointing north, things like that. So you are basically going into this rarefied space, this magnetized field of energy, which seems to extend quite some way up into the atmosphere.
So here's the question. Is the magnetic field that's in the crop formations, has it been brought there from another source, or is it using this planet's magnetic field?
I suspect that whoever is doing this and whatever is doing this, and I don't for 1 minute suspect that it's local, it has complete understanding and control of natural universal principles. And by this I mean the principles of light or electromagnetism, of sound, of magnetism, and quite possibly even the ability to harness and manipulate the local gravitational field. The magnetic part of it comes from two points. One, very early reports, eyewitness accounts of people who used to go into crop circles and found that whatever metallic objects they took inside the crop circle, they found that they had been magnetized. They could stand pocket knives on end in a crop circle. Young kids who take bicycles into them found that the bikes had taken on this magnetic charge. Compasses suddenly became frozen and attracted metal objects to them. Strange things like that. And in the modern era, Colin Andrews, who did some remarkable work in the late 1990s to look into the magnetic effects of the crop circles, discovered that in between 5 and 20% of them, if I'm not mistaken, that the Earth's magnetic field, the local magnetic field in and around the crop circle, appears to have been shifted by exactly 4 degrees. We're not quite sure at the moment why this should be. My hypothesis is that this shift, this local shift, what I'll call a phase shift in the magnetic field, is what is allowing this little cookie-cutter effect, this little window of opportunity for information to come in from another level of reality into our own third-dimensional space-time continuum. It's this little shift which I think is worth really looking at very, very closely. And from what I recall of Colin's research, when they actually did magnetometer surveys of the local area, the actual shape of the very crop circle on the ground appears to have been imprinted in the local magnetic field some way below the ground as well. So it's very much worth looking at. It's very important data, and it is quite surprising to me at the time when he'd mentioned the fact that as a result and a consequence of his research that in 80% of the crop circles that he'd went into during that era that he could not find this, and suggested that they perhaps had been man-made, that right. So many people attached the attention to that, and yet we should be looking at the important data that he discovered, because that is very, very important, because if indeed these people, as I call them, because I'm sure they're perfectly physical in their level of reality, as we are in ours, if these people have got complete control of natural principles and they're able to shift the local magnetic field, then obviously there's something there for us to look at, because there could be incredible benefits that come from that. I mean, we know for one thing that our ancestors used to use the very same magnetic principles to align churches, to align ancient sacred sites, because we now know today that the actual diameter and circumference of the crop circles is perfectly delineated by the actual crossing points, the crosshairs of crossing lines of the Earth's magnetic lines of energy, what some people sometimes call ley lines, more accurately called telluric currents, which is quite a mouthful, actually.
So, Freddie, if you were in the middle of a crop formation and you tested it, and it did not show any strong magnetic field, unlike, let's say, some others that you might have been in, would you then assume this one was probably man-made?
It would be one of the indicators. There's a huge laundry list of checks that my colleague and I go about doing. It's just one of the very many things that we try to look for. But here's the strange thing. It seems to come and go. There's no rhyme or reason. Sometimes you'll be there and it'll happen. Your compasses will start pointing in the wrong direction, which is very annoying when you try and take measurements. In some cases, the actual compass itself will start spinning around, even though you leave it on the ground and you haven't even tapped it, and you've got no metal objects nearby. I mean, the compass is just going completely around in circles, as if someone fed it LSD or something. It's quite strange, and there's no rhyme or reason as to when it happens. It comes and goes. No one knows why. It's as if it's almost obeying some kind of movement in the Earth's magnetic field shift itself, because we do know that there are certain times during the day when the Earth's magnetic field is at its lowest ebb. For example, the hours between 2 and 4 in the morning, the Earth seems to be going through this sort of sleep mode. In fact, it seems to open up its magnetic field which allows information sort of to come in and also to leave. In fact, it is a known fact that between the hours of 2 and 4 in the morning, some 90% of recorded hospital deaths actually occur. It seems to be that there's this window of opportunity when the magnetic field is at its lowest ebb, that people's souls are allowed to leave, and by the same token, a window is created that information is allowed to enter. And that's very interesting.
What do you think is the reason why we are getting these formations? What are they sending us?
For this information, I'll go back to the early 1980s. And I quote a lot of information from a very gifted woman in England, a very good friend of mine, actually, named Isabel Kingston, who used to be a banker. And then she had these incredible premonitions and became a psychic. And it was something that she had been born with, but sort of not really pushed to its limit in her early years as a banker. In fact, being a banker and a psychic is quite an extraordinary feat when you consider that it requires the use of both your left brain and your right brain. And I was very privileged to, in my early years of research, to look through her channelings. And she had began to vector this information from this group consciousness that began to tell her that in the next few days of Earth time, that the world will be seeing impressions in the fields, in the corn, as we call it in England, of circles that will be showing information that will be of help to the human race. And it fascinated me to no end, because 7 days later, they in fact did get the first rash of crop circles in the modern era around the base of Silbury Hill, which is basically Europe's tallest man-made spiral mound. A site which actually dates back to 2600 BC, and it was actually erected under the guidance of the Tall Ones, or the Shining Ones. And in fact, the name Silbury actually means the Hill of the Shining Beings. And I go back to this because when you look at the transcripts, they begin to tell us that these circles and all of these shapes were all meant to carry certain information that was coded inside of them. In other words, encoded geometric information that carried codes that would help wake up humanity to its greater responsibility. And I quote this verbatim, by the way.
Why do it in a code, Freddie? Why not just lay it right out there for us?
Well, this is the big question, isn't it? Let's say you and I were having a nice drive through the field, George, and having a nice quiet banquet, talking to ourselves, listening to some good music on the radio. And if we came across this beautiful golden field, and we saw these enormous letters that said, good morning, Earthlings, we are from Mars, I think we'd be very amused. We'd definitely get out of the car and take a picture and tell everybody back home, this is a bit of a lark. But would we really take the opportunity to get out of the car, walk into the field, and find out how it was made? I mean, would we really sort of go in there and look for geometric theorems? Would we look at the way that the crops had been altered? Would we take the samples back into the laboratory, find out if there were changes to the molecular structure of the crops, to the crystalline structure of the soil, if there were any connections to other forms of ancient language that was encoded into them? We certainly wouldn't, I don't think. And I think that the whole reason for using symbol as a means to attract our attention is because symbol gives an essence of concealment. And I'm not talking about hiding something from you in a naughty or a malevolent way. I'm talking about engaging your curiosity as a human being. What is the symbol saying to me? Why is that symbol almost known to me? Why is it speaking to me? And the reason is because each of these symbols, we now know, when you take them apart and you start looking at the constituent parts, you begin to find that there's a hidden harmonic ratio that's encoded into them. You start looking at the fact that there are hidden geometric shapes encoded in all of the designs. So, for example, you could be looking at a ring and a circle that's outlying, and when you look at the way that they're connected invisibly, you'll find a hidden geometric ratio. And those geometric ratios are fundamental to the way the atoms in our bodies are arranged. In other words, the crop circles are almost mirrors of our genetic code and our molecular code. And as such, we start looking in the mirror, and part of our subconscious starts speaking to us of this memory. Something about this symbol is triggering something in my mind, and it's helping me to remember. which goes back to what I was saying at the beginning, how I and many, many other people who are involved in this research seem to have the same premonition that these things are triggering something in our subconscious that are helping us to remember. And look at us now, 20 years later, in our modern research, all the books that have come out, all the research, all this information that comes out from the crop circles, talking about new mathematical theorems, new elements that to do with sound, new information that talks to us about how the plants have been altered at the crystalline level. Even the soil has been manipulated. Even the water has been coded inside the crop circles. This is new technology, new forms of understanding that the crop circles are giving us. And I think this is why they're using symbol. It's part of the mystery. It helps us delve much, much deeper than we would do if we were just given a very simple answer.
What if they're time travelers, Freddie? What if physical time travel of a human being is not possible in the future? But maybe this is a way they can try to communicate with us. Maybe they're trying to tell us things from the future, and maybe they've somehow invented some device that etches into the land, into the crops. Is that possible?
Theoretically, I think it would be possible, and of course, time is a very mysterious subject in itself, and it's tied to gravity, as we know. My understanding is that their concept of time doesn't really exist. These are beings, as I said, they're perfectly physical in their level of reality. And in some cases, we can't even begin to conceive of their shape because they are so ethereal. And from my understanding of a lot of the channeled material that has come through is that they actually exist in our time, in their time, and every time. For them, there is no distinction between past, present, or future. And what they're basically saying is that they are part of our own history, then, now, and in the future. And the whole purpose of what they're trying to do is to wake us up to our greater responsibility, because we, as part of this molecular world where nothing really is physical, as science now knows, all that seems physical in the universe is basically a bunch of atoms stuck together, spinning at a frantic speed, giving the impression and the illusion that everything is physical, when in fact it's not. If you take the human body apart, for example, and you condense it down to its component parts, you probably occupy the space the size of a teaspoon. And when you think of the world as being a series of atoms in a series of vibration, every time we have any thoughts or any deeds or any actions on this planet, they have a sympathetic effect somewhere else in the universe.
All right, hold that thought, Freddie. Freddie Silva, our guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. Freddie, have most researchers ruled out the old theories of UFOs and flying saucers as the possible cause for some of these crop formations, or is that theory still alive?
I think the theory is still pretty much alive. I think it's just expanded somewhat to encompass non-physical types of craft. There have been very, very few witnesses who have actually reported physical craft in association with crop circle events. Most of the eyewitnesses talk about non-physical craft, and but then again, it goes back to the idea of the non-physical universe, doesn't it? What does constitute a physical craft? I think it's still pretty much alive and well. We have a lot of reports and also of video footage of balls of light moving in and out of crop circles at ridiculously fast speed and doing very improbable aerial maneuvers and aerobatics. So they're definitely around.
Freddie, the geometry of these crop formations fascinates me. I mean, just the shapes and everything. You know, I haven't even seen people on this planet come up with ideas like that. Yet we see them in these crop formations. What do you think they're trying to tell us?
It goes back to the genetic code of the human race. We're basically geometric in nature. When you take our molecules apart, what you look at are an array of molecules and atoms which are vibrating at very fast speed, all interconnected with an invisible array of geometry. And so the shapes and the designs are communicating along the same wavelength in terms of design. And it was through this that they're trying to get the information across. They get information to our DNA, for example. They get information into our crystalline structure, which is basically the bones in the human body, which carry our genetic memory. And by that method, the information is given subtly, subconsciously, which is why many people, you know, they feel that there's a right brain communication going on. They quite and quite put it into logic. They just feel it. And the information also is carrying technical information. And there are a number of scientists that I'm aware of who are quietly beavering away in their laboratories, working on new forms of technology based on what they have interpreted from the crop circles. There's a man in Oklahoma, I believe. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But he's been quietly experimenting with the shape of the Barbary Castle tetrahedron crop circle as a three-dimensional model. And reportedly, he's actually managed to get the thing to levitate several times. And again, this was mentioned back in many, many years ago that the crop circles would be carrying this kind of information to people of a scientific mind in order to help us facilitate a new level of technology. So it's all coming about to be true. Again, through the old channeled material, it's all coming true.
You'd mentioned that the magnetic field of the planet shuts down for a couple hours in the morning, 2 to 4 a.m. Any specific time zone that we're talking about?
Judging by the way my body feels, probably right about now. I think it doesn't totally shut down. It just happens to be at its lowest ebb. It's let's say hypothetically, it would be beating at a frequency of 500 megahertz during the daytime. As it gets progressively towards sunset and then into the middle of the night, it will go down to say 250. And by this sort of wave motion, by the sine wave method, it allows certain things to basically shift and move around the Earth, and for certain universal outside principles to then move and interact with the Earth as well. It's part of the Earth's rhythm, just like the moon and the tides and the way that it affects the water table in the Earth.
Freddie, let's talk a little bit about sound, because it appears that sound might be also a possible vehicle for creating these formations.
Yes, indeed. In fact, sound is one of the most popular recurring themes in research through many researchers. I mean, it goes back way into the history of crop circle research. I mean, Isabel Kingston's mentioned this. Pat Delgado's dwelled in it. John Michel's dwelled in it. Andrew Collins and, of course, Ed Sherwood as well. I mean, all of these people, we all seem to be drawing from the same source. We've tapped into a fundamental truth, and once you've tapped into that fundamental truth, it just latches onto you like a magnet. And part of the thing that got me involved into sound, I mean, I was looking at the channel transcripts from my good friend Isabel Kingston, and in a way, I wanted to try and prove that it was true. I had this nagging feeling, this gut feeling that there was something to it, and if I could try and prove that there was truth behind this, it would validate the words that she was coming, that were coming through her. Now, you know, sound, of course, is one of the most important parts of the religious cultures on this planet. It's part of our creation myths. In fact, it's the only thing that any religion on the planet can actually agree on. You know, the sound was at the beginning of the universe. In the beginning, there was the Word. The Word was with God. No matter how you sort of move that around in Hindu cultures, in Egyptian cultures, God always creates things using the word of sound. And also as a musician by nature, it began to be the line of least resistance for me because it was a very familiar territory. But it was when I read this incredible book, and which in hindsight almost seems obvious, I was reading a book called The Secret Life of Plants by Peter Tomkins, which is an incredible writer. I mean, if you ever want to learn anything about any subject, that guy is able to pull together so many different things together. And so I was reading through this book, and they kept talking about the incredible use of sound and how it interacts with people, with objects, with plants, with soil, and also not just audible sound, but sound above and below the human hearing range and what it does to things. And it was just fascinating. It began to pull together a lot of very interesting points, and certainly began to put together the basis of this theory. And I'm certainly not the first person by any means to have come up with this theory, and I'm not going to be the last one either, thank God. And it's actually reassuring that so many different people from different parts of the world are using and coming up with the same theory. I think it's quite reassuring. We're on the same path of inquiry.
Freddie, our satellites seem to have mapped every area of this planet on an ongoing basis. They can call up coordinates and say, you know, look at this sector, and you can actually see things as small as a license plate on a car. Do you know if our government has looked at the coordinates where crop formations occur and have monitored them being made by whatever these forces are that are making them?
Boy, wouldn't I like to be a fly on the wall in the halls of government to find out the answer to that question.
I mean, they might have incredible pictures that they're holding back on us.
A friend of mine, no familiar connection, I think, Jonathan Sherwood actually mentioned this while we were having a little quiet pint in a pub, because one of the, he mentioned the fact, the very point that you're making, George, the fact that, yes, they do have very advanced technology, most of which we are totally unaware of, because, I mean, a government works in secrecy, as we know, so we're always working 10, 20 years behind them. That's a given fact. Given the technology, there is no doubt that they would be the first people to track the, any kind of blip on the radar, because if the, if the crop circles are electromagnetic and sonic by nature, which we know they are because they're leaving certain physiological imprints in the soil and in the plants, then obviously they'll be tracked well before any person was able to spot them on the ground. And I was very fortunate to have talked to a couple of farmers in Hampshire in England about this. In fact, if memory serves me correct, they volunteered the information because they were telling me about one incident in England in 1998 when they heard some very unusual sounds coming from their fields at about 4:30 in the morning. And all their farm animals were behaving in a very agitated manner, in fact, including the cat and the dog who tried to jump through a window. And the farmer said, they never do that. They're the most placid creatures you'll ever find. So he thought he might be having burglars or something, or foxes. So he went out into the field, and in the middle of the morning, and at that time in the morning, you can just about see something. It gets light very early at that time in England. And the first thing he sees is a brand new imprint in the middle of his barley field, and a very large Chinook helicopter, military helicopter, basically on top of it, taking photographs, reconnoitering it, the whole thing bristling with high sensitive equipment. So we know that they are definitely the first people on the scene of a crop circle. So it makes you wonder, what on earth are they tracking?
Yeah, exactly. There's something. But I've got to believe they've got something. They've seen it. They've seen them being created. And they're probably just as baffled as we are right now.
I think they are. And I think it goes back to the whole idea, the concept of fear, that they're trying to basically put for the whole hoax angle in order that they can try and study the phenomenon before we do, so that they try and control it, perhaps, and somehow use it against us. But I don't think that's ever going to happen. I think we're working with much more... more honest principles, I think, in that respect. And I think there will always be a gap behind the rest of the research field because we are working with much more honorable principles in bringing this out to the public.
Has anybody investigated the soil? I know we've seen pictures of what, the wheat might look like and the fact that there is that magnetic field to it and everything else. But have they gotten into the soil at all to see if anything's changed there, Freddie?
Oh, very much so. And again, it goes back to the early reports of the farmers who are saying that there's something very unusual has happened to the soil inside the crop circles. And this is especially so in England, where, as you know, Georgia, it does tend to rain once in a while. And when you go into a patch of the field which has been subjected to rain overnight and you walk into a crop circle and the soil is bone dry, you know that some kind of heating element has taken place. And what happened in the last few years, people at BLT and Dr. Levin Good, Nancy Talbot, and so forth, they actually undertook some soil analysis experiments, and they had them analyzed in California and then sent the analysis to Dartmouth College in New Hampshire, Vermont border. And it was found that the crystalline structure of the soil had actually been altered to a quite a considerable degree. Now, the study was done in a sort of a blind test, which meant that the people who were analyzing the soil didn't really know where it came from. And the conclusion was that something, an enormous pressure and heat, had subjected the crystalline structure of the soil to be changed. And the conclusion was that this soil would, in order to do that, it would have had to be left below the ground. In other words, it would have been compressed by a couple of miles, for example, of rock strata, and subjected to the Earth's heat for a substantial amount of time, years, in order to achieve this kind of changes. And of course, the soil was not taken from below the ground. It was actually taken from the topsoil. So the conclusion was that whatever changed the crystalline structure of the soil, the energy source had to generate heat for an incredible amount of, let's see, centigrade, 800, 900 degrees Celsius, 1500 degrees Fahrenheit, but in a very short amount of time. And I'm talking about nanoseconds here, because if you subject the plants on top of the soil to the same heat, obviously they will be incinerated, and that is not the case in the crop circles, because the plants are alive and well, even if they are slightly charred on the outside, very, very slightly charred, but yet undamaged.
We have heard that there have been some black helicopters seen in the area of crop formations. Can we then assume that governments are fully aware of this, that they're doing ongoing research, they're studying this whole situation, or do you think they've just simply not touched it at all?
Oh, I think Colin Manders and Pat Delgado touched on this back in the early 90s. Sorry, in the early 1980s, they were actually privy to a very ingenious hoax perpetrated by the British military, as it turns out, when they had the field under surveillance. And then during the same surveillance period, the military decided to show up as well. I mean, the fact that these things were happening at the edge of military fields in England, in southern England, because part of Salisbury Plain in England is actually military training land anyway, just by coincidence. So it turns out that the military were keeping the whole thing under surveillance for quite some time. They even were able to perpetrate a hoax under complete darkness, right under the very noses of the research team, under pitch dark. And it was even suggested during parliamentary question time that the military were actually asked to by Margaret Thatcher's government to keep the whole phenomenon under scrutiny. And this is actually written in the minutes of the parliamentary motions. So we know that they were definitely interested. And having lived in England, as I did for many, many years, in that particular part of the world where we get 80% of the world's crop circles, I also saw on many, many occasions when I just went out walking, just for the hell of a good walk, saw helicopters doing very, very strange maneuvers in out-of-the-way places and keeping certain fields under surveillance. Now, there are parts of that world where they do use the fields for training and military purposes. I mean, helicopters have to practice some way. But there are those occasions when they do start harassing people and they do go out of their flight path using some very sensitive equipment and doing things which are very unmilitary, you know. So one has to basically take the notion that, yes, they are keeping the whole thing under surveillance for sure.
In your opinion, Freddie, you know, if someone had just tag you to a wall and say, where are they coming from? What would you tell them?
Ooh, I'm always very reticent to talk about it. I mean, I know I can do this on the show because of the genre of information that you have on here.
Sure.
I mean, I write about this, obviously, in my book, on my website as well. And I give the whole background to this because it seems so far-fetched, and yet there is a lot of background to it. And I keep going back to these channeling materials of this incredible woman. Most of this channel material has now been validated through time because of the information that was revealed back then, which has since come to pass. And to try and put it in a nutshell, we are dealing with a core group consciousness which keeps popping up throughout the human history, specifically at times when we need a certain kick, a certain reminder of what it is that we're doing down here and our responsibility as to what we're doing here and the reverberations and repercussions of our actions on this planet and how they are affecting other levels of reality. And in this particular group, we're dealing with a group consciousness that calls itself the Watchers, and they seem to have been involved in the core group of making the crop circles. And it comes to pass over the last few years that other levels of reality, other groups, are also involved in making other designs as well for their own specific agenda. And I don't mean that in a malevolent way. I mean in the fact that we have different races on Earth who have different agendas and different backgrounds. It's the same thing in the universe as well. Different races, different groups of consciousness who are giving us helpful information imprinted in these designs, which are helping us to basically move forward at a much more positive stage.
Well, is there a possibility these messages are angelic?
Absolutely, and it's been my experience overwhelmingly that that everything that seems to have happened in the crop circle phenomenon around me, to me, have been of a very positive nature. I mean, for one thing, just the beauty of the designs that are created seem to suggest that there is, for lack of a better word, as you say, George, an angelic hand behind it. Criminals rarely, very rarely, create beautiful art, elegant art, an art which certainly is of a great intellect, as the late geometer and astronomer Gerald Hawkins has found out when he uncovered five new geometric theorems encoded in crop circles. That's a mind of a very high esteem, of a very high intellectual source. So I have no doubt in my mind, from my personal experiences, that there's nothing but benevolence that comes from this phenomenon.
Where do you pick up the book, Secrets in the Fields?
Well, if you want to support your local author, your struggling author, you can pick it up from my website at www.lovely.clara.net or the Crop Circular. There's also a DVD there in case you want to basically look at the whole book in moving pictures. Yes, it's certainly available now, and look forward to receiving lots of interesting emails from people who are curious.
Indeed. Stay with us, Freddie. When we come back, I'll tell you what. Let's open up Fast Black. And Freddie Silva, our guest right here on Coast to Coast AM. Freddie, assuming for a moment that these crop formations are made by some force, some unknown force, how long do you think it takes to make the crop circle, if it's made by one of these forces?
Well, according to at least 80 of the eyewitnesses around the world that have been collected over the last 20 years, they seem to appear in a matter of about 15 seconds.
Almost instantly, then. Just boom, there it
instantly.
Is.
In fact, I remember Pat Delgado, one of the early researchers who has now retired, a lovely man, by the way, he reported mentioning as a NASA engineer when he was looking at the whiplash of the down plants that the motion, the flattening motion, would have to be extremely rapid because the way that the plants started at the origin rotated in a spiral form and met back at its point of closure, the whiplash would have had to last less than about 8 to 12 seconds. In other words, there have been substantial damage to the actual seed heads had it been lasting a lot longer. So that seemed to correlate a lot with the eyewitness accounts of things happening in about 15 seconds. And I think I also remember that Nippon Television on one occasion actually inadvertently caught a crop circle appearing on film right at the very edge, tantalizingly so, of the film equipment, a crop circle that looked like a question mark. And it's a very, very rare piece of footage, which had to be handed over to the BBC, by the way, under the contractual obligations. And would you believe the BBC lost it?
Oh, no.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
It did make its rounds onto a video, which is now impossible to get your hands on. But yes, the evidence is that they actually did make copies of this. And you can see it right at the very edge of the limit of the equipment at 4:30 in the morning. There is a little swirl motion in the crop, 15 seconds. Absolute magic.
Let's go to some Fast Blast questions, if we can, Freddie. Pat from Alberta, Canada, wants to know if there are any healing or ailing effects by standing inside a crop circle.
Oh, absolutely. And this is an area of incredible interest, and I certainly encourage people to look into this further. I put some of this on my website just to get people interested. And there's one woman in particular in England who's actually taken to collating a lot of information, Lucy Pringle. She's collected at least 700 reports of people noting down the physiological effects when they go into the crop circles. Some obvious, some not so. But to give you a general impression, and again also from some of the research that I've collected, it seems to me that there is an electromagnetic influence in the crop circles which seems to be stimulating the human electromagnetic field, because we are, after all, electromagnetic beings too. So whenever you encounter another electromagnetic field, you are basically going to start finding some kind of sympathetic vibratory reference. And I had situations where people have actually gone into the crop circles, in some cases ingested the seeds. And in one very famous case, not far from me in New Hampshire, a gentleman ingested the seeds, went into a crop circle. He had a retinal cancer, which is 99% malignant. In other words, the cornea would have to be removed because of the cancer was so developed. And after a couple of months of ingesting the seeds and having gone into the crop circle, the tumor was gone. And to this day, the doctors are absolutely baffled. That's one of the most incredible stories I've heard of in terms of crop circles and healing. Another one happened not too far from me in Portland, Maine. It's something I just heard about. A young lady who administered water, which had been potentized by placing on a picture of a crop circle, which is part of a technique that was actually developed by the Institute of Resonance Therapy in Germany, by the way.
Just a picture now of a crop circle.
Just a picture, an unadulterated picture of a crop circle. You can transpose the energy of the circle through intent to the actual water, as in homeopathy. And she administered this to a patient, a friend of hers, who again was suffering from cancer, and from what I understand, the cancer is gone.
Incredible.
It is incredible, and people who've even had problems lying down for 15 years, they've had to be helped to their beds and had to have someone help them rise from the bed in the morning. They go into a crop circle, they lie down, they get up totally on their own accord, and they are fine. This is incredible. The consequences for healing and free healing are quite incredible.
Sure.
Which also means that the effort by the establishment, if you are of that inclination, to try and put a lid on this kind of thing is quite extraordinary. They would go to extraordinary lengths to make sure that you and I don't know about this.
I mean, if you're saying that you could get a clean picture of a crop formation and then place like a jug of water on top of it, It would have incredible medicinal properties for you?
When I was doing some work with the Institute of Resonance Therapy, I was amazed to hear of this, how they were able to... and their technique is actually a lot more complicated. It does involve orgone energy as well. But they use the images of the crop circles to transmit a code across distance, in other words, remote healing, to places in Europe, forests, rivers which were dying. In Eastern Europe, they were able to transmit a code to the local energetic field, which stimulated the local energetic field and was able to rejuvenate the growth in local organisms. That is quite something. And I have also worked with a number of people who've taken this kind of technique in a much more simplified way, combined it with the homeopathic principle, and taken a picture of the crop circle. And again, it has to be an unadulterated shot. It cannot be shifted in the X or Y axis as you can, for example, in Photoshop on a computer. You take the picture, and you rotate the picture ever so slightly until it clicks with the Earth's magnetic field. And if you're into your intuitive work, you will know when that happens, because your body will suddenly feel like it's clicked into a large cog. It's a very unusual feeling, like someone's trying to tickle you. And you put on top of it a vial of water, preferably spring water, comes from a natural spring or a holy well. And through your intent, through your purposeful intent, you basically ask this living organism that is a crop circle to transfer the healing potential of the energy of that design into the water. And then it is administered homeopathically through drops. And incredible things are happening. This is all just empirical evidence. I mean, it's also circumstantial evidence, but people are beginning to react positively to it. And
that is
it's incredible, absolutely incredible.
John from California wants to know if there's any specific pattern to crop formations when they change, is there another evolution that you could predict, for example, on what they could look like?
The prediction is actually quite a bit of a fun that we used to do every year. I actually was very interested in that very subject, the predictive quality of the crop circles. Many people have actually tapped into that with great success, as if you're actually talking to a living being and they are reading your thoughts. For many, many years around the late 1990s, I was doing dowsing, and I began to predict the crop circles, where they were going to be, to a fairly good degree of accuracy, to within two or three fields. The timing was always a problem, because time is something that's relative to us here on Earth, and not to anybody else in the solar system or in the universe in general. And what I did every year, at the beginning of the season, say in February, I would ask different people for their impressions. I would ask computer experts, I would ask psychics, I would ask accountants, people from America and in England, and I would ask them for their impression. What are they going to look like generally this year, and where do you think the big one is going to be? Because there's usually a season finale, we like to call it, and also preferably a location. And I would collate this information and then just forget about it until, say, September, till the end of the season. And I'll be amazed every year that we always manage to get it pretty much on target. In some cases, even predicting the number of genuine crop circles that were going to appear for that year. One specific case in 1999 where we all pretty much got it exactly on the nose. We predicted this 7- and 9-fold geometry that was going to appear as a major pattern on a specific day in a specific field in Roundway in England. And would you believe it, I even booked the plane 2 days in advance, knowing full well the thing was going to be there, without telling the pilot, because it would have ruined the experiment. And then it's a very funny, actually it's a very sickly funny story, because we had actually, a few of us had wanted to go to the field because it was actually below a hill. We would have been able to see everything. I mean, we were just rubbing our hands in glee. We're finally going to nail this thing. We know where it's going to be. We're going to capture it on film, finally. This is our momentous occasion. And would you believe it, at 11:30 at night, not one person could lift their feet off the floor of my house. We all just fell asleep. It's as if the house had been gassed. Everybody collapsed on the sofa. We're all dragging each other across the room saying, look, this is a momentous occasion. We're going to miss this. And we just could not, for the whole of the money in China, get up and go out of the house. And come early morning, 7 in the morning, I suddenly woke up and realized, oh God, we've missed it. And I raced across to the airfield, got in the plane, and told the pilot, look, we're going to go, here's the location, it's going to be Roundway. And the pilot said to me, forget it, I was flying over Roundway last night, Freddie. There's no way there's a crop circle there. There was nothing there last night. And I insisted. I said, let's go there. I'm sure it's there. So we flew there, and the early morning mist parted like a curtain in a play. And there, lo and behold, was a crop circle exactly in the shape and position that we had all predicted. And I can't even I can't tell you on air the expletive he shouted.
No, you cannot.
Needless to say, he converted very quickly to crop circles being genuine.
Tim from Riverside, California says, two words, Star Wars. He believes this is the use of high-intensity lasers from space done by government. Your thoughts?
Very difficult to prove, isn't it? Part of me wants to say yes, and part of me in 1999 was suspicious enough of three specific crop circles in England which didn't seem to fit the particular requirements of a hoaxed design or a genuine one. These were three patterns which just were unusual. They were very clinical. They were almost made by a machine rather than a sentient being or a criminal, as I tend to term hoaxes, unfortunately. These three didn't fit. But at the same time, there was this unusual energy that was being doused in them. It was a sort of a fleeting microwave energy. I tend to douse for either sound, magnetic energy, or just a low-lying earth energy, electromagnetic frequencies. Microwave is a very high-end spectrum electromagnetic frequency, and it's very fleeting. It comes and goes. It dissipates very, very quickly. And it suggested to me in these three designs that microwave had been involved. Now, whether the designs were originally man-made and then were imprinted with a beam of microwave energy is another matter. But I haven't been able to follow any further because I can't prove the existence of these weapons. But there is that hint that something was up. The only physical evidence I'd have to sustain this argument is that when I went back a year later to look at these sites where these three particular designs had occurred, the plants, the new growth that had sprouted from the ground, all the plants were stunted. And that is a good indication of intense microwave bombardment, that it does stunt plant growth. Microwave is very, very detrimental if used in the wrong way. And if they are using beams in the Star Wars experiment, I would have probably thought that they would have used that kind of frequency. And these three examples are the only things I can point to.
Well, and as you've been saying too, Freddie, that we have had crop circles for hundreds of years. We didn't have our satellites up there then.
That is true, of course. Which brings us back to the point, who is making these? And it goes back to the point that I keep making in the book, that there are different levels of awareness. There are, you know, these group consciousness called the Watchers, who are very ethereal beings who keep popping up in our history. There are people who make land art to try and mimic crop circles. You know, some look very, very good in the latter years, but they can't mimic the real phenomenon. And then there's the military involvement, there's the hardware involvement, which we know little about because these people work in total secrecy. We have to keep a very, very wide perimeter in this understanding.
John from Portland again wants to know how many countries have crop circles. I think your answer was 29, right?
29 to date, and the number just seems to keep growing because of the availability of information on the Internet. As more websites come up, so more people begin to come online and they realize that, hey, there's someone that I can tell this information to. I was over in Portugal, which is actually my country of origin, believe it or not. I collect passports for a living, George.
You do?
I'm an American resident alien, and I can tell you I am certainly not green, and I'm much taller than 4 feet.
and you're legal.
And I'm legal alien.
Yeah, that's important.
But yes, I mean, I was over in Portugal doing some energy work down there, and someone emailed me a short while after to report that they were flying into the airport in Lisbon, and in the rice fields just outside the airport, they actually saw a very large oval-shaped crop circle in the fat paddy rice fields, which actually we've had in Japan as well. So they're everywhere. They're popping up everywhere, and they're becoming much more prominent here in America as well, which is, I want to say, a prediction I'm making that they are coming much more prominent here in the States.
Why is that? Why do you think?
I think because the general awareness of the public here is becoming much more acceptable. Again, like in England in the 1980s when, you know, Pat Delgado, Terence Meaden, and Don Tursley first began to recognize the crop circles for what they were and gave them their attention and intention, that they, like the living organism that they are, they reacted to that positive intent. And I think here in America, and perversely through the use of the film Signs, which it really has very little to do with crop circles at all, and people should take it as a piece of fiction, which incidentally helped my book sales to no end because my book came out the same day as the film, quite by coincidence, I have to say. Through that film alone, so many people have suddenly become aware of the phenomenon. They become to either ridicule it or they become to accept it as something of a very high nature. And because of that acceptance, I think the phenomenon is beginning to react. I was at a conference in California recently, where in fact I rubbed shoulders with you, George, where people were telling me that they had crop circles in Missouri and that we'd never heard about this. And one, because some of the crop circles appeared on Amish land, and the Amish were very afraid of them. They thought they were the work of the devil, and if you came anywhere near them to try and photograph these crop circles, they would not only shoot you, they would actually sue you, which is very unusual for Amish people. And some farmers even set fire to the entire field before anybody came to actually take any measurements. So there is that trepidation still, that fear, but you can see that people are beginning to react in a positive way in America, and specifically in the upper Midwest, in Montana, in the Canadian prairie, and the circles are reacting to it. If you give them a welcome mat, they will come.
I wonder if it's possible, Freddie, that because we're beginning to see more and more of these in the United States, if whoever is doing this with a code, they're getting very frustrated that the code hasn't been broken yet. So maybe they're saying, look, we've tried the people in England. They're not getting it yet. We've tried it here. You know, is that possible?
God, if I was one of them, I've given up a long time ago. I think, actually, it's... I actually dedicated a whole chapter to this because it is fascinating. I mean, I myself have been very frustrated by the lack of supposed forward progress. But in fact, there is a lot more positive forward motion than we are aware of. A lot more people are making good progress in deciphering, in using the information to good use. And many more people are putting the information out into the world. We just don't get to hear much about it.
All right, stay with us. We're going to open up the phone lines now and give you an opportunity to talk with Freddie Silva. And, of course, a lot of people continue to write in about the crop formation pictures and on healing water. We'll have Freddie talk a little bit about that again when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And just a reminder, the night of Memorial Day, we will have a full-fledged program for you. There will be no best of tape. I will be here for you on that night. Let's go to Freddie Silva now, and then we'll go to the phones right here on Coast to Coast AM. Freddie, let's talk a little bit more again, if you could, about these healing properties of water directly related to these pictures of crop formations people are writing in. I mean, will it work for them, or do they have to do something very special?
From what I've been working on, and also from the people that I hear back from in terms of these sort of experiments, It's a very much an individual thing. I was under the impression that each crop circle had a certain code which meant something. For example, the symbol means something and only that, and it's very, very specific. But as I'm doing a little bit more research on this, I'm beginning to realize that actually the symbols are pertinent to each individual being. In other words, let's say that you're afflicted with something. Let's say you suffer from Parkinson's, for lack of a better thing. That person would basically look at a set of pictures, and just by browsing through the pictures, that person as a living organism would subconsciously lock on to a specific image which it is actually searching for, that has the genetic code and the molecular code that it requires as an organism to replenish itself. So basically, it's not the healer or the person that is administering the remedy that's in charge of the actual operation. It's the actual person that needs the healing, that chooses for him or herself the very image that it requires to make itself better. Now, there is one slight sort of amendment to this, and that is that if it's part of your soul purpose, if you subscribe to this theory, that, you know, you basically are a body which is basically inhabited by a soul, and it has a purpose. If it's your sole purpose to basically undergo a certain illness because you have to learn something from that experience, or you choose to have that experience, then obviously the healing may work for a short period of time, but then you will basically end up with the illness anyway, because that's what you choose. There is no way of learning that, because we are all individuals and we all have our own particular paths in life. But I do know from what I've observed so far that it is the person that chooses the specific picture, and then the person who actually administers the remedy, or even any individual can do this just by taking a photograph, putting some spring water on top of a crop circle, and just intuitively asking yourself, you know, where should I rotate the picture? Where does it feel comfortable? And you are a self-regulating organism. You know what's best for your own body. And the more you learn to trust that, the more information you start picking up for yourself. And it's just a matter of rotating the picture until it aligns again with the Earth's magnetic field. You know, and there's that connection again about magnetism again. And once you've done that, you're locked into this grid. You're locked into the actual matrix of the Earth and the universe. And then it's just a matter of imprinting the water through your intent. And as we've learned now from the work of Emoto in Japan, that your intent and its effect on water is very, very powerful.
Absolutely.
Even to the point where you write the words "I love you" or "I hate you" on two samples of water, and the difference in the crystals are very, very different. Now, we know this is also happening in crop circles. The water is definitely being potatized, at the ground level. Lucy Pringle, who for many years at her own expense, at a great expense, I should add, has taken upon herself to bury samples of water in crop circles and also outside them, and sends them to a laboratory in France to have them blind tested. And the person who tests them has found that the samples taken from the crop circles, which he doesn't know have come from the crop circles, by the way, the crop circle samples have been potentized, energized, up to 136% above normal. So clearly the energy is in the circle already. What is incredible is that that energy transfers to the actual picture. And we know also, for example, the myths in Peru, where the native cultures don't like having their picture taken because they say that you are taking part of their soul. I wonder how true that now is in light of this information.
Let's go to the phones. West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast on the Air with Freddie Silva. Hi there.
Hello, this is David. I'm calling from Denver, Colorado.
Hey, David. Hi. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Yeah, I was wondering if your guest had seen the book, The Hypnotic Power of Crop Circles by Bert Jansen.
Actually, I haven't. I've been taking a hiatus from reading and even looking at a piece of paper. It's been quite a process when I sort of put my book together, and I'm just taking a little bit of a breather, just going around lecturing about it more than reading. But I am aware of the book, so I can't really comment on the book because I haven't read it, to be honest.
Okay, I haven't either, but it just has a lot of beautiful pictures in it, and one that's very intriguing is called a crop circle called Adam's Grave. That was in Wiltshire in August 2003. It has like three birds.
The swallows, yes.
That's very magical. I see these crop circles as some kind of almost a talisman in a way. I don't know what you would make of that. I mean, there seem to be a lot of pentagrams, you know, stars, and a lot of circular motion in these crop circles. I'm just wondering what your perspective on that might be.
They're very much fundamental shapes to nature. I mean, the pentagram, the hexagram, the heptagram, the seven-sided figure, all of these shapes are very fundamental to nature and life. In fact, the pentagram specifically is fundamental to nature. In the Pythagoreans in ancient Greece actually used it as a talisman of health, and we now know that the pentagram is created by the evolution of the golden mean spiral, which is basically nature's own fundamental spiral, the spiral that governs the growth in cells, in plants, even the length of the bones in the human hand are governed by the ratios found in that spiral. So all of those shapes that you're looking at are having a resonant effect, not just visually, but also subconsciously, because your body is reacting to it, because it's looking in the mirror, basically, because you are a living organism, and so are the geometries which are inherent, and I mean, most of the time, built into, invisibly, in the circles. So what's the first reaction that you're having on a positive level is this incredible recognition of yourself in the actual crop circles, too.
What if these formations were sent to us by some incredibly galactic artist who merely is having a good time?
He's having a damn good time in that case, isn't he?
He sure is. A very creative good time.
It does. I have to say that any time you draw in the light, and for me, in my experience, I do see the crop glyphs as being creations of the light, not of the dark. Anytime you invoke the light, you obviously invoked the element of the trickster as well. So there is that trickster element involved in it in some way. And part of that trickster element also manifests itself in the hoaxers, who are also having, in their own little way, a bit of a laugh. There is part of their joke to try and go out and take the mick, as we say, out of the researchers who are taking this so seriously. So again, you've got to take everything in its greater context, that there is something very benevolent going on, very loving, and at the same time you are attracting by its very nature its very opposite.
Let's go to our wild card line. Your turn. You're on with our guest Freddie Silva on Coast to Coast.
Yeah, my name is Glenn. I'm from Columbus, Ohio. How are you doing, guys?
We are well. Thank you.
Wonderful. Now, I talked to you before, George, when you had Mitch on about the occult. I was the guy with the internal telescope.
Okay.
Now, I had a question as far as the crop circles. Now, I believe that, I was doing some internal searching, and I believe, you know, we have 5 points to our body. Also, there's 5 points to a star. Now, do you believe that the crop circles are being formed by a different dimension in coalition to our five senses, being the 5 points, you know, to a star, you know, having a coalition between the two is just a dimension that we're just not seeing, or maybe a dimension we're not seeing with our sixth sense?
It's again, this goes back to the channeling material of Isabel Kingston, who has been one of the main channels of information from the core group of circle makers. As I said before, there are many different levels of reality who are each imprinting their information on the earth with their own particular agenda. This is why the circles, by and large, tend to be grouped into different groups. It's almost like different painters, you know, on the scene. And from her information, the watchers, who are the core group of the of this communication, they explain their level of reality as being so ethereal that we as humans cannot even conceive of the level of dimension that they're on. They describe us as beings of light. They see us as light and sound. They keep talking about how, and you know, I've been in the seances myself when she's actually in trance. So they describe that their form is very ethereal, and that we cannot even begin to conceive of the sounds that they hear and the color that they see. So the best thing that they say is just enjoy what you're seeing. Enjoy the creations that they're giving you, and try not to think about it too much logically.
Yes, when I did my astrology chart, I also study in the mediumship and clairvoyancy, and I practice in the tarot of art and parapsychology type work. And when I was born, my astrology chart shows that the stars were aligned in the perfect position of a pentagram. I do a lot of meditation and try not to focus on too much stuff like that, but I can't help it.
I don't blame you, especially with a chart with a pentagram. That's a good start in life, isn't it?
Great. Thanks for the call. First time caller line, your turn. Hi there.
Hello.
Hello, and where are you?
I'm in Ohio delivering USA Today.
Okay. As you deliver, go ahead.
When you were talking about the helicopters over the crop circles, my father was in the Air Force for 20 years, and 15 of it he crewed on rescue helicopters. And when we were stationed out in New Mexico, he told me of when they would be flying over the desert, they would see these shapes in the sand. And he said when they flew over them that the helicopter would start vibrating different. And I didn't know if your guess has maybe come over images in sand, like crop circles.
Oh, very interesting. I mean, it certainly harks back to the reports from the British helicopter pilots. I'm talking about commercial pilots now, because we never get to hear anything from the military, of course. But the helicopter pilots in England, they certainly will not ever again fly over the crop circles, because they did report some very unusual events taking place inside the helicopter. I mean, there was shaking, there was momentary lapse of in problems in the equipment that they were using, gyroscopes starting to rotate in weird ways. Red warning lights, that kind of thing. So, and because if you're dealing with an organism, which again, part of which is electromagnetic, you've got a machine which is electromagnetic, the two are just probably going to not work well together. So, yes, I think that that would correlate with what's happening in England. And you actually mentioned that pattern in the sand. I think you're referring to the Sri Yantra Mandala, I believe, in the Oregon Desert and the Alva Desert. Back in 1991, when during one of their flight paths, one of the local military bases, which used that area as a training path, suddenly stumbled across 13.3 miles of lines etched into the Alva Desert, into the encrusted sand, in the shape of this incredibly massive Sri Yantra Mandala. And yet there was no signs of entry or leaving on the desert floor, and the pattern just seems to have materialized from one evening to the other without any sign of work in progress. So that would be my answer to that.
Well, we did live out there during Desert Storm, so that's about the same time period.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, by the way, what's the headline in USA Today? What's it say?
Oh, let's see. It says, deal avoids showdown on judges.
That's the headline?
Our lovely politicians and they're fighting.
Yeah, doing the thing. Okay, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. We get all kinds of information on this program, Freddie.
Certainly do.
What do you do next, by the way? What are your investigations up to? Where do you go? What's your next step?
I'm not altogether certain, although I seem to have spent the last year just putting together this wonderful little DVD, which again, I keep forgetting to mention this, which you can get on my website, www.lovely.clara.net, as well as my book. It basically, I'm looking more and more into the crop circles in relationship to the sacred spaces, because that's where inevitably the information goes to. It's that harking back to ancient memory, reminding us that our ancestors too were working with the very same principles that the circle mixers are using, and they maintained civilizations for thousands of years in perfect equilibrium by using these techniques. I think, personally, that's where the real message of the crop circles is taking us. If we look at how our Neolithic ancestors used magnetism, the alignment of their sacred spaces on the landscape, you know, Stonehenge, for example, being a great example, which lies at the crossroads of various lines of magnetic energy, just like its own crop circle, the Gothic cathedrals that came later and were superimposed on top of ancient pagan sites, all of these places always used for heightened states of awareness and healings and connections with the gods, for lack of a better word. I think this is where they're trying to get us to, and this is why I suddenly put together this little DVD documentary, because I wanted people to see the connection, the greater picture. And it's really getting the word out there, because once you start putting the crop circles in relationship to things that people can see and feel and have a sense of reality, which is a cathedral certainly very much is a part of our life, or a standing stone is part of our life, something you can feel and touch, and it's there, it's concrete, then the idea that the crop circles are very much real and are on par with that spiritual technology becomes much more easy to assimilate. And that's pretty much where I am at the moment. I wrote this huge book, which I never had any intention of writing, believe me. I was quite happy in my life. I did not want to be an impoverished author. But as I keep saying, the fringe benefits have been fantastic. I've met incredible people. I've rubbed shoulders with some very interesting and intellectual people. And the fringe benefits have been fascinating. I've seen balls of light. I've been levitated off the ground in a crop circle, much to my amazement, which still baffles me to this day. I never would have exchanged.
How high up did you go? Just a few inches, or did you go way up there?
I have no idea to this day. It was 1997 when I went into a circle, and about the time when everything about sound was concreting in my mind, everything was pointing to sound for me. Again, by the sheer fact that I've been working with Isabel Kingston for quite such a long time, and as a musician, I just went in that sort of general direction. And I played this tape of this music, and I lay down in a crop circle in 1997 in England, a beautiful, beautiful pattern. And I just remember being knocked out, a huge blow just being hit on the back of my shoulders, which actually it didn't hurt. It's almost like, as a joke, like Dr. Spock came up behind you and knocked your, pinched one of your nerves. And I just sort of relaxed. I just began to rise out of my body. I could see my hands flying around me and being surrounded by these very, very tall beings and just being loved. All I can remember was this incredible feeling of unconditional love. And this information was just being downloaded into me, which then became part of this book. And as I said, I never had any inclination to sit down and write a book. I kind of got pushed into it. And to this day, most of the information on there still baffles me. I mean, there's 10 pages of bibliography at the back alone, just to give you an idea of how much research went into this thing. And my intention was just to let people know, this is my experience, and this is a genuine experience. And there's something here of great benefit to humanity, from the healing, from the subconscious connection, from the universal knowledge and the technology that's coming out of it. And people ought to know, because it's going to improve their lives to no end.
All right, stay with us. We'll wrap up with final phone calls with our guest, Freddie Silva. Freddie, are there scientists out there right now or concerned people who are using their computers with these crop formation pictures trying to decipher the codes that might be included in them?
I hope they are. If they are, I'm not aware of them, and also they're not making themselves very known. In fact, you remind me of a situation last year when I had an email from a member of NASA, whose name obviously I can't mention, who actually requested a huge amount of information about crop circles, because he stated that NASA and certain parts of NASA are very interested in them. They are studying them in their own time. And there are indications that there are scientists who are going off on their own, doing their own research in their own homes, quietly beavering away, because they feel that there's something more than meets the eye. And, of course, they are correct, because as we keep saying about the channeled materials from 20-odd years ago, that the circles would encode information of a technological nature, and scientists would be lulled into the crop circles at a subconscious level, not quite knowing where the information was coming from. There was a communication that was happening at subconscious level. So that is reassuring that there is something going on, but what you find is that these people tend to do it very much quietly in the background, basically because of the fear of ridicule and because of the pressure that certain agencies will come to bear, and that's a very smart way of doing it, actually.
Does the government of England, again, a country that has 80% now of the crop circles by your estimate, do they take this seriously? Do they investigate it publicly, or are they pretty quiet about it too?
They've gone very quiet since the whole Doug and Dave scam came out, which incidentally was actually known to people in government circles weeks before it was revealed to the public. So clearly the origins of Doug and Dave seem to have emanated from deep within the halls of government in England. They've been very, very quiet since then. They feel that because the whole thing has been debunked and ridiculed, that the whole thing can now go away. And certainly when you have motion pictures which portray crop circles as malevolent signs from evil, head-eating aliens, then obviously the whole ridicule aspect has been attached to it. And they feel that there's so much misinformation and disinformation put out throughout the media now that people are so confused they don't know what to believe. And I think to some degree they feel quite happy that this has happened. Now, whether they're working quietly away at this, we'll never know, obviously, until someone actually spills the beans from within the government. But around the time of the original research group of, George Wingfield, Colin Andrews, and Pat Delgado, it certainly seems to have been the case that the government was taking it very, very seriously, because the mention of the crop circles and kept coming up in Parliament, and that they should be at all kept under surveillance as much as possible. And I believe that a certain amount of money was appropriated towards research into them. But apart from that, we just don't know anymore.
What's going on in China with crop circles?
Nothing as far as I'm concerned, apart from the fact that my book has just been translated into Chinese. So we'll never know what happens down there. They're a very secretive society.
Are they one of the 29 countries that have crop formations?
Not to my knowledge, oddly enough. But then again, it's only been in recent years that news has come out of China that they have some incredible pyramids out there. So God knows what else they're hiding in there. I wouldn't be surprised if they had crop circles, because we have had reports of crop circles in rice paddies in Japan. So I suspect that they are around there. People probably, it's like in most countries around the world, they just don't know who to tell. And then when the authorities find out, they inevitably clamp down on them. I mean, it is a very close society in many extents. So I'm waiting with bated breath to see what comes out of there when my book gets released out there.
Let's go to the phones again. West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Karen. I'm in Sacramento.
Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
I would like to ask the guest, have you ever considered taking all of the crop circle sightings that you have all over the whole world and lining them up and reading them around the globe as like in a line? So might like hieroglyphics, maybe it reads something around.
Right, some kind of pattern or something, huh?
Yeah, like you read a book, or in a line all the way around.
Interesting.
Yes,
I don't know what order you'd put them in. Freddie, what order would you put them in order to read them?
Oh, I guess you have to start at the beginning, as far back as we can go. I think a couple of people have tried to figure that out in England, and sometimes some minor patterns do pop up. The problem is that when you start getting the hoaxing around about 1991, it begins to interfere with the information. And certainly the last few years with the hoaxing has gone so out of control in England. And I mean, if you go on my website, it'll give you an idea of just how bad it's become. Because the crop circles appear as a seesaw pattern. It's a sine wave. They go up over a certain period of time, and then they decrease in number over a certain period of time. And we're now in that lull period. I think they're going to start picking up possibly next year in England for sure. But that's my gut feeling. So it's very difficult to be able to sort of make any kind of pattern or suggestion in that respect. And also the amount of man-hours that it would take to plot over 10,000 patterns on the ground, including their GPS coordinates, it's quite an undertaking, and we're just not funded to that degree. What I can tell you is that I did stumble upon a piece of information from the year 2000, if memory serves correct, where I was looking at specific alignments just in Wiltshire with some of the circles that happened that year, all of which bore a certain family resemblance, as if they belonged together. And I began to plot them on the ground relative to the local sacred sites. And I found that all of them were referencing, the crop circles were referencing the local sacred sites and each other with two specific angles. And those angles were 32.72 degrees, which I'm now understanding is a angle of manifestation of matter, which is a piece of research I'm working on right now. And the other angle that they referenced each other to was 19.47, of which we know a lot about. It is the angle of energy upwelling in this planet. In other words, at a point on this on Earth where there's an energy anomaly that emanates from the center of the Earth upwards, and it manifests in our physical space as the islands of Hawaii. Now, you can look at the other planets in the solar system, like Venus, Mars, the red spot on Jupiter, and so on, and you find that all of these anomalies also occur at 19.47 latitude on many of the planets in the solar system, and this is a hard fact now, which goes back many, many years. So it seems that they are using specific angles of manifestation and energy in order to locate themselves. But what I found was interesting was the fact that they referenced the sacred sites. So the ancestors were using the very, very same principles that the circle makers are now using. That's the best example of that I can point to of a specific mapping on the landscape, but on a very, very small scale.
Next up, let's go to our wild card line. Your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, is this me?
It sure is, sir. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going? This is Adam from Decatur, Illinois.
It's fine, Adam. Go ahead.
I had a question for your guest. I didn't catch your guest's name.
His name's Freddie Silva.
Hey, Freddie Silva, I had a couple of quick questions for you. On the crop circles, I was wondering if there was anything different in the like magnetic field, if there was anything strange going on. And my second question is the crop circles that are found nowadays, if they have any relations back to the field formations, for example, like the spider monkeys, snakes, and birds that were made ages ago. I don't know if you're familiar with those type of field formations or not. But
in Nazca in Peru, yes, very much so. I'll answer the second one first because it's the easier one. I am not aware of any connection that exists between the crop circles and the Nazca lines and shapes in Peru. Not to say that there isn't one, I'm just not aware of it, apart from the fact that both can be best seen from the air and appreciated from the air. In terms of the magnetics, yes, I mentioned earlier that research has been done that would show that within the airspace of a crop circle, the Earth's magnetic field appears to have been shifted about 4 degrees. It's a phase shift which seems to have an effect on any electronic equipment that is taken into the crop circle and also on compasses and cell phones and what have you.
Huh. Okay, well, great. I really appreciate your time, and I really appreciate your show. George, keep it up.
All right, thank you, Adam. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
Is it me?
It is you.
Oh, George, I've been listening to you for months now while I'm painting a mural all night, and some things that Freddie is saying are so vindicating for me, because for all these years, I've been painting these murals, holding shapes and movements in the sacred geometry, which I often see in the circles, of course, and also the coding that's in nature for edible plants and all these things. And what comes out in the placement of the piece, it's realist, it's representational art, but it really seems to help people to feel a spaciousness and a peace, and it's so, how can I say it briefly? I was lying here this evening listening to your show. Hi, Freddie, by the way.
Hello. In fact, you just reminded me of something, talking about shape and relationship.
Yeah.
There's some research that came out of the former Iron Curtain, where they were very cash-strapped in those days, and I guess they still are, and they actually began to experiment with sacred geometry and shape, because they understood that the myths carried through, saying that in ancient times, the temples were encoded with specific geometries to invoke certain states of awareness and healings. And they figured if this was true, that they basically could use this stuff to heal people for nothing. And what they researched, and specifically in Bulgaria and in Russia, was that when they put sick people into rooms that were shaped like pentagrams, the rate of healing went up remarkably. When they put schizophrenic patients in hospital wards which were shaped like trapezoids, the rate of healing went up remarkably as well. And also when they put blood samples in spherical shapes, the rate of coagulation also went up dramatically. So there was something very incredible about the power of shape and its concordant effect on the human body. So thank you for reminding me of that.
Oh, it is. It's amazing. I see it. I have a new commitment now to convincing children's hospitals to let me come in and do some work in the children's wards now, because it's not just me anymore in my mind. It's these things really do help people. So I thank you so much for your wisdom and what you're doing.
Well, thank you.
Okay,
I mean, you're also
you.
Helping to ground this information in reality. So thank you for that, and especially with kids. I mean, I one of my most hair-raising experiences in my research has been to talk to children at school, because they're so disarming. I mean, they are not bound by the same conventional laws that you and I are. And I was amazed just to be able to sort of put some pictures of crop circles in front of them and let them do the talking. And it was amazing what they were coming up with. I mean, they were suggesting things that, you know, we hadn't even considered, which just shows you that they react to, yeah, the unfettered mind reacts to the crop circles, which has a wonderful abandon and such a wonderful innocence, and they can see them for what they are. And the teacher, when she puts her hand up saying, well, after seeing the crop circles, who's now interested in learning about geometry? Everybody's hand went up. And she said, you know, before that, you couldn't even get kids to look at shapes, geometry, algebra, maths, nothing, and now they're so much into it. I mean, that alone is an incredible healing tool, isn't it?
If you could get one answer, just one, Freddie, with this crop circle formation phenomenon, what would that answer be? What would you want to know?
Ooh.
It could include where they're from, what the message is, but you could only get one answer.
I struggled with the same thing when I came to the last sentence in my book, and I just didn't know how to wrap it up. And I wrapped it up in one word, which I'm not going to reveal because I don't want to ruin it for anybody. But the answer for me, I walked into the crop circles believing in nothing. I was an atheist. I didn't believe that God existed because of all the nonsense and the negativity that happened here on Earth. I could not believe that a loving God could do this. I now believe in God in my own particular form. I believe that there is another life, another universe, many, many universes, all of which are loving and guiding. That's been the answer for me. I've already received my answer. I sacrificed the marriage, my house, all my earnings. I've flirted with bankruptcy. And I keep saying, you know, but I would never have swapped this for anything in the world. Because of the fringe benefits I've received, and are now allowed to share this information with people and see the positive change that it's bringing to them. I think I've already had my answer. For me, it's been a privilege and a pleasure to be involved in this journey. And it's just, a privilege and a pleasure to be able to continue on this journey, to be able to share the information as I receive it. So I'm already content, George. I think I've already had my answer.
Good for you. East of the Rockies, you're up. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
I've got a question. Has he ever done any studying with the crop circles in relation to, like, the stars, the formation of the stars, or how galaxies are set, to find a pattern from relating to the crop circles?
Oddly enough, someone did suggest that. I think several people have suggested that over the years. I have not personally seen the conclusion to their experiments or their research. But I did discover that in 1994, there was a number of crop circles, and each year, by the way, they seem to have a new theme. In 1994 in England, there seemed to be a lot of solar system patterns, and around 95 as well, a lot of star system patterns, spirals and things. And I learned subsequently that during that year, it was a year when Isabel Kingston and the group that I'm involved in went around the landscape opening up sacred sites in England, tumuli, standing stones, and other places, which actually were aligned some 6,000 years ago to represent the mirror image of the system Canis Major, of which Sirius is the dog star, one of its main components. All of these sites are the mirror image of this thing, this constellation in the heavens. And wherever they went to do their openings, these crop circles that appeared like star systems or galaxies manifested nearby, almost as a confirmation of the work. And I just wonder if there was a connection between that, because Sirius has always been associated with a teacher. And, of course, we are being taught a lot of things from the crop circles. That's probably the best example I can pinpoint to that particular line of inquiry.
Okay, let's go to our final quick call. That's all we'll have time for. Hello, go ahead, hon.
Is it me?
Yeah, I got 1 minute
show,
for
George.
You. Thank you.
You mentioned that you are into the study of sound, and I'm very interested in the healing aspects of music, chanting, and sound, and wondered, had you any ideas or responses to the rosary or yoga chanting or that quality of sound that is healing?
30 seconds, Ray. Go ahead.
The long answer is basically, I've actually written about that in my book, which you'll find at www.lovely.clara.net. The short answer to that is yes, and the correlation exists with Gothic cathedrals, where if you actually apply Gregorian chant, you find that brainwave patterns can go up as much as 4,000% in those spaces. So there's something about Gregorian chant and the refined space of the Gothic cathedral, which uses the same kind of geometries used in the crop circles, which generate an environment which stimulates the human electromagnetic field and its level of awareness and healing. And that's basically the short answer in 30 seconds.
Freddie, thank you so much for being on the program. Appreciate it, and good luck with a very special book, Secrets in the Fields, okay?
A pleasure. Thank you very much, George, for having me on.
Indeed, my pleasure. For Karis Coburn, Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, and always Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.